Hello and welcome to Join the Docs, our weekly peek under the medical bedsheets. Today we are recounting our and our colleagues' experiences of strange objects found in our smaller orifices, our ears, noses, mouths, and more intimate parts. We will be recounting anecdotes and experiences of what objects manage to frequent our darker recesses, from the common to the more surreal, from fluff to toy soldiers, from insects to bullets. We will also be exploring the ingenious methods of removal, a true challenge to the medical profession. As always, we will advise as to when and where to seek expert help.
Thanks for being here to Join the Docs, our weekly podcast. I'm Professor Jonathan Sakya, a surgeon.
And I'm Dr. Nigel Guest, a family practitioner. And we're going to share a medical melange.
Indeed, a clinical cornucopia.
Indeed. Medicine is fascinating, and we want to share some tasty morsels.
So on the menu today, Nigel, well, previously we've discussed things that people insert in their anus that takes them to the doctor. There's other parts of the anatomy that we're going to consider. And you're purportedly a doctor, so maybe we could start with the ears, the nose, and such like.
I've heard of those, yes. Well, the human body is a wondrous thing, is it not? And what a fantastic design feature that our fingers fit into nearly all of our orifices, those wonderful portals into our bodies. And God, or whoever designed us in their infinite wisdom, has certainly thought, we can have some fun with this. I'll give them something they can poke into various holes. So of the seven or eight orifices we have, two or four of the most interesting are your ears and your noses. And we know that children love them as we do with their tiny little fingers and their tiny little orifices.
Little brains.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Feel that it's almost incumbent upon them to stick things into their ears and their noses. Oh, God, all sorts. So paper's a good one. They like to stick paper in there. Beads, little things like that. Toy soldiers, that's a great one to stick up your nose. Pens, all sorts. Fluff. Hey, I was a fluff putter-upper Absolutely. When I was a kid.
What do you mean?
Well, fluff. You used to take fluff. I mean, there's fluff, isn't there? And from bed sheets, from, yeah, I hate to say from your navel, because clearly that's that sounds even worse. But, you know, fluff in general, you know, a bit of dust, fluff.
Well, I'm sorry, now pause. What would you do with
this? You put it up your nose, of course.
Why?
Because you can. That's what you do what when you're a kid.
You to do
well,
that?
We had to make our own entertainment in those days. There was no internet.
No personal digital assistants. I'll put some fluff on my nose.
You know, those were the days when
that's
we had
bizarre boredom.
Boredom and fluff-based entertainment was a big thing. Anyway, but that's the thing. But actually, it can be quite serious, particularly in children, because often they won't inform their adults. They don't particularly have any symptoms from it. But something stays up there for a long time. You can develop infection. You can certainly damage the nasal mucosa. And there's a fantastic thing called a rhinolith, where you can actually have sort of calcification of something up your nose.
Turns into a stone.
Yeah, basically turns
a
stone.
Lith
as in stone. Yeah. Yeah. You can do it. And one of the other things, the little things that the little creatures and adults will insert in their ears are tiny batteries, and that is quite dangerous because you can get quite a lot of erosion, and obviously it doesn't help having something that creates
current. Kids can swallow these lithium batteries. They're very dangerous.
Oh yeah,
and you have to remove them endoscopically or surgically. Very, very dangerous.
Absolutely. Do you charge for that?
Or you recharge.
Absolutely. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, I always remember reading the book, is it Louis de Bernier, Captain Corelli's Mandolin? Uh-huh. And the opening scene is the doctor there cures a guy that's been deaf for 40 years by removing a pea from his ear. And he's so grateful. What the hell that's got to do with the rest of the film, I have no idea, or the book. But it always stuck in my mind, being a doctor.
Ear.
But I, in my own personal experience, I've had things like Q-tips or cotton buds in ears and trying to get those out. You can
Isn't that the lovely expression that they tell people, don't put anything in your ears?
The smallest thing that should go down your ear is your elbow.
Right, yeah.
Which is excellent advice.
Because you can do a lot of damage to your ear by sticking these cotton buds into your ear.
Well, people think they're cleaning their ears with earbuds, and what they basically do is compacting. You can imagine, you know, you could trying to take a cannon and you're trying to ram the cannonball down with all the other stuff. That's basically what you're doing, is it? You're just compressing wax down your ear. So, yeah.
Go to the doctor instead if you
just leave it alone. Wax is natural, wax is normal. Just don't fiddle with it. One of the things I had in surgery was somebody came in, and this sounds like a joke, but it isn't, came in with buzzing in their ear. They felt that their ear was obstructed. You can see where this is going. And had buzzing in their ear, and not an uncommon occurrence, although I was surprised by it, is to have an insect in your ear. And I must admit, I looked down this ear, and staring back at me, or waving as I like to think, was an insect. I can't remember what it was. It was a fly or a something creature. It wasn't the obvious thing, which would be an earwig, because I think that's a bit of a myth, although possible. And I saw this thing, I thought, my first reaction was to go, Jesus. And then my
reaction, you name insects.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. I had it written across its forehead. Yeah, I was thinking, that's a novel experience. I'll have to try and do that. So you have to kill them first, right?
The insect, not the patient.
It depends whether you want to save the insect or the patient. So you clearly have to ask the responsible adult. What would you rather save? Okay, we'll go for your child. But it's, so you can do that with alcohol again.
Again.
Features hugely in my practice.
So you squirt alcohol into the patient's ear?
You do, and that either kills the insect or gets it pissed and puts up less of a fight. Or you can put local anaesthetic in, or you can put a mineral oil in, being sensible. And then you've got several options. You can either grab it and pull it out with an appropriate forceps or whatever, tweezers, as I like to call them, or you can flush it out, like syringing your ears. And what a satisfying thing to syringe an ear and flush out big insect. I think that's one of the joyous things of medicine.
It reminds me of that song, There Was an Old Lady Who Swallowed a Fly.
That's right. Ended badly, I think.
You know, just talking about going back to mouths, there's the classic thing about, you know, the thermometer we normally take an oral temperature, and there's the classic one about the surgeon reaching into his pocket to write some notes, and he pulls out a thermometer and he goes, oh, damn, some arsehole's got my pen.
Oh, that's a very old joke. That's right. So, Jonathan, penis.
What?
Well, to be more specific, urethra. Because
I'm Jonathan.
I like to call you urethra. A bit like erythra.
So, of course, the urethra is the pipe that takes urine from the bladder to the outside world, or in the case of men, takes semen from the testicles to the outside world, or the inside world. So I was, in researching for our podcast, Nigel, I descended down an internet rabbit warren and somehow got onto the debate in America about abortion and the very famous Roe v. Wade decision that legalized abortion in America. And that led me to a discussion of what they call originalism in the States, which is whereby the Constitution as it was written a couple of hundred years ago was sacrosanct and shouldn't be changed. One of the signers of the Declaration, a chap called Gouverneur Morris, he was actually the guy who came up with the phrase, we the people of the United States, right? That opening phrase. He was a very prominent abolitionist. He did not believe in slavery, but he suffered from what they called suppression of the urine.
Right.
Which meant that he couldn't pee. And it was because of a narrowing in the urethra. Nigel, there are multiple causes, right?
Yeah.
So things like in men, an enlarged prostate from a benign disease or a cancer or a sexually transmitted disease like gonorrhea that can cause a stricture. And traditionally what they did back in the 18th century was they used dilators, which are, you may well cross your legs and make a moaning noise. It's basically a device that you put into the urethra to stretch up the narrowed pipe. We still do it today.
We do.
Still used today. But in those days, they used dilators made of whale bone.
Oh, as you would.
As one would. The whales weren't very happy about it.
Absolutely, no.
But this chap, apparently,
didn't want to go and visit the doctor, whether it's because he didn't have health insurance, who the heck knows, but he dilated his own urethra and he perforated. And that caused urine to leak, infection to develop, and it killed him. So whenever Americans talk to me about the wisdom of the founding fathers, I do have some concerns.
Is that why only got as far as we, the people of the United States? So he couldn't finish his sentence.
It should have been finished with, ouch! Absolutely. That bloody hurts.
What are you doing with that whalebone?
Stay the hell away from me. Oh, God. So, Nigel, have you heard about this story that you need to be very, very careful about taking a pee when you're in a river or a lake, especially in South America?
Well, it does upset the locals, doesn't it?
It upsets the locals. Well, it's kind of like, you know, when you go to a swimming pool, right? Everyone is concerned that it has someone peed in the pool.
Well, particularly if they do it off the high diving board.
Listen, if it's a public swimming pool, I think you can be pretty...
That's a 4.3.
I think you hit them. Oh, God. Well, anyway, going back to what I was saying about being frightened about, you know, taking a pee in a river or a lake, especially in South America, is because of...
Piranha jumping out and biting your willy.
Piranha biting your willy. It's the so-called penis fish.
Yeah.
That swims up the urethra.
Is that a river?
It's a river. No, what is it? That thing is, if you're in denial, you say, nah, it's just not a river in Egypt. So there have been stories about this for a couple of hundred years. Have you ever heard about this? So there's a fish, it's called the kandaroo.
Oh, I was going to say
it's
wonder.
From the genus, I've written this down.
No, you read it, go on.
It's called Vandalia. It's a form of catfish. It's about 1 inch long, the fish, not your willy. So it's about 1 inch, 2 centimeters long. It's thin. It's eel-like. It's actually a parasite that attaches itself to the gills of other fish and drinks their blood. And the story goes...
Like a vampire fish.
Well, sort of. But, you know, the story goes that it's attracted by human urine in the water. When someone pees in the water, according to these stories, the fish swims in, lodges itself in the urethra of the unsuspecting individual, and once inside, it uses the spines on its gill to, like, secure itself in place, which is, I love this, an article described it as painful. It's like...
For whom? The fish or the person?
Oh, God. And it also says it makes removal difficult. I should bloody well think so. I love how wacky the internet is. One of the stories I read said that it can actually jump out. If you're standing on the riverbank having a pee, it can leap out the river.
Like a salmon.
Bloody hell, you'd need to have a very large willy for that to happen.
Well, right? Funny you should say that.
Well, we've established 1 inch, Nigel. And it can swim up the stream of urine. It can lay eggs inside your bladder. It can burrow its way through your bladder and kill you. And it can only be removed by cutting off your dick.
I know.
Patient's not yours, Nigel, again. Yeah. I think we need to...
Oh, I know. This. I read this. It burrows in sandy bottoms.
I don't have a sandy bottom.
Well, no, but if you did, you'd be in trouble, wouldn't you? That's why I got. That's where they live.
In the riverbed. There we go.
Okay.
So I did.
I went to school with him, you know, sandy bottoms.
Sandy bottoms. You know, I was desperate to get to the bottom of this, and I did find a report from 1997 from Brazil. It was a single report. It was in Portuguese, which meant that I had to use Google Translate.
You had to use a menu.
And it was a little bit doubtful. There were a number of inconsistencies. And furthermore, there was a report from 2001 where they put urine into different aliquots, different portions of water, just to see if the fish were more attracted to urine-laden water. And apparently they weren't. But it doesn't make any sense.
I'll tell you, that's a very boring PhD, isn't it?
I was peeing in... Well, I have to go to South America.
Yeah. On my holidays,
But it doesn't make any sense because, number one, there's no oxygen inside the bladder, and you'd question what the evolutionary advantage is for a fish.
Well, it can do everything else. It would have moved on from there, wouldn't it, I'd have thought.
It absolutely
In fact,
would.
It has. Perhaps it has.
So, Nigel, have you come across any of these sort of things?
Well, in my everyday practice, I don't very often see anything related to anything going up your urethra or into your bladder. I certainly see people with urethral strictures and the distressing problems that arise with that. But I was looking on the internet, as indeed were you, and I've come across a few things that have managed to get up people's urethras and indeed into their bladders. And that includes nails, staples.
Staples.
I think they've been straightened out as opposed to inserted with a stapler. And a bullet.
A bullet. Do you know what caliber?
Oh, do you know, I knew you were going to ask that. No, I think it was a. I don't think it definitely.
It hadn't been fired.
It definitely wasn't 2-2. Well, it wasn't fired up the urethra. That would be a very accurate shot, wouldn't it? That would be very accurate. But no, yeah, a bullet. Somebody had inserted quite a large bullet from the X-ray that I saw into the bladder. And the most bizarre one I saw was a lady who had managed to insert an entire pen up her urethra into the bladder. And what was more impressive is the urological surgeons managed to get it out without doing open surgery.
Yeah, through the urethra, like put a snare around
it. Absolutely, yeah, and pulled it out. Yeah, week later she was writing with it again. So that was impressive.
That's a result.
Absolutely.
Actually, just want to go back because you mentioned nails. I'm fascinated by the whole business of tattoos and piercings and things, and something we should definitely talk about.
Well, we could show all your photos.
One day. I have to tell you, you know, people pierce their ears, their lips, their tongue, their noses, their belly buttons, their nipples. But the one that gets me is there are guys who put nails into their dicks. They have piercings.
Sideways.
So, yeah, and I tell you, you know, like most men, when you have a pee, you look down just to check everything's where it ought to be. I have never looked down and thought, you know, it's kind of okay. I'm kind of happy with it. But I know what would make it look a whole lot better is I took a bloody great big nail and whacked it through there. I just don't get it personally.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned nails because there's one guy who used to put nails up his urethra and then into his bladder. And on 7 occasions, the surgeons removed this from him. And then he moved on into screws. As you do.
Well, they Phillips head.
I don't know. I think that was the big problem. They had to get the right equipment to get it reversed. Absolutely.
Well, let's move on a little bit and let's talk about something else. Let's talk about the vagina.
Right.
And I think it'd be useful to, first of all, define what that is.
Really? I'm not going up that avenue, so to speak.
No, Nigel, in all fairness, it's kind of like diarrhea. Or the vagina is nothing like diarrhea. But, you know, people use the term diarrhea to mean 20 different things. Diarrhea just means poo that's got more water in it than it should have, right? That's what diarrhea is. You can have diarrhea once a week.
Well, you can't have a vagina once a week, can you? I think you're stuck. I think you're stuck with it.
Oh, God.
Come on, where are you going with this?
The important point is the outer part, that's the vulva. The vagina is the tube on the inside. And I say that because some people complain about...
That's the inner tube, then.
It's the inner, that's your bicycle. Oh, God. You know, for those of you who are listening or, heaven help you, watching, you only have to put up with this occasionally. I have to deal with this guy for God knows how many years. Anyway, so there have been issues with things, foreign bodies in vaginas. And Nigel, be very careful what you say next, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So there are, you know, all sorts of things like with vibrators. I had a lady who, she was endeavoring to get pregnant, and women very often monitor their temperature because your temperature goes up a little bit at the time of ovulation. And by measuring your temperature, you can choose the best time to have sex during the month if you're looking to get pregnant.
About 4:30 in the afternoon.
as long as there's nothing good on telly, isn't that what you once said?
Yeah, there's nothing on, yeah.
Well, she decided that it would be more effective if she put the thermometer in her vagina, actually into her uterus. Her aim was exceptional because she managed to get it into the cervix through the opening, the Oz, the opening in the...
Was she Australian?
She was not Australian.
Or us, as we like to say.
She managed to get this thing, the thermometer, all the way into her uterus. And again, it required some nimble surgery to remove it. Have you ever come across stuff in the vagina?
I was talking about the propensity for children with their lovely little fingers and their lovely little orifices managing to insert things into themselves. And apparently, when we're talking about vaginas, little girls are very likely, or not likely, but they often put little things into their vaginas. Paper is a big thing again, just like ears and noses, and beads. Lots. Beads, no, not fluff. Well, yeah, I suppose it could put fluff in there, but they're too busy putting it into their ears and noses. I mean,
there's only so much fluff.
Goodness sake, there is a fluff shortage at the moment.
So, there's a global shortage of fluff.
Absolutely. Oh, dear. Absolutely. But in terms of, certainly in terms of little beads, or even you think about it in terms of small little toys, there's a tendency for all of us, I say all of us, in our youth to think about doing that, apparently. Anyway, but the other one is with big girls, a common problem is, more common than you would think, is retained tampons. Mm-hmm. And it's not that difficult to forget that you've put a tampon in, and tampons can be retained for quite a while and often become very infected.
And that can be very dangerous.
It can be, and you can get toxic shock and all sorts of other issues, and it can be a very serious condition, and obviously should be removed and any consequences of that treated, which is very important. But that's really my experience in primary care.
So isn't, again, a central message, a repetitive message, is set your embarrassment aside. If something happens, you know, whether you've licked a bucket and you can't get your tongue off, or you've got something stuck where the sun don't shine, get thee to a doctor, get it dealt with, because there can be long-term health consequences otherwise.
Absolutely. And we're aware that we are bringing some of the humorous side to us, but we are also always saying to you, these things can be serious, and always get them dealt with by the appropriate professional.
Absolutely. So we've talked about some orifices that you're born with. Sometimes people like me make new ones. There is a word, stoma, and stoma means mouth, right? And sometimes for a cancer or a bowel obstruction or an infection, we need to bring the bowel out onto the surface of the skin to empty into a plastic bag, sometimes for a temporary period of time, sometimes permanently. Mm-hmm. And I've certainly seen some interesting experiences. There was one patient, we had done what's called an ileostomy. So this was small bowel emptying into a bag. And he kept having what are called fistulae. A fistula, as you well know, Nigel, is where there's an abnormal connection between two surfaces.
Yeah.
And in this case, it was the interior surface of the bowel and the skin. So he was developing these little holes around where the stoma came onto the surface of the skin, which would cause leakage of fecal material and infections and problems with his skin. And it was so problematic. And he was a very nice young man who had a condition called ulcerative colitis that had led to his major operation. And every time we dealt with one of these fistulae, he'd get better and then another one would pop up, and we could not get to the bottom of it. We were, if you'll forgive the indeliberate pun, until one day, and I'd asked the nurses to keep a close eye on this chap. And one day, one of the nurses very innocently said, you know, I've not seen anything abnormal. His mum sits with him all day, and when she's sitting there, she's knitting. And I had one of those light bulb moments.
Yeah. An epiphany.
And turned out that he was taking the knitting needle and inserting it into his stoma and creating a new tunnel. And he was doing it because he liked the attention of the medical staff.
And he had 10 scarves and 47 bubble hats, is that right?
So, yeah. But I mean, it's kind of, it was a nice bit of detective work, but it was in some ways very tragic.
And how did you deal with that? I mean, was that dealt with psychologically, having a word, or?
Yeah, no. We got the psychiatrists involved. You know, this poor young man had been dealing with a chronic disease all his life.
Yeah. And having an ileostomy is no fun, is it?
But actually, he was a lot better than before his operation.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was maybe it was searching for continued care and love.
Yeah.
Sometimes do stuff. I've had a couple of entertaining ones with people with stomas. One was the guy, again, young guy, but boys do silly stuff. This guy thought it would be amusing. You know those guns that fire ping pong balls?
Nerf
guns. They fire ping pong balls. This guy thought it would be fun to put some ping pong balls into his stoma
And as gas built up, he'd be able to fire them out at his friends.
Oh, my
God. It didn't end well. It didn't end well. We had to remove these darn things with an endoscope. But the best one was a patient I had who was one of the jolliest individuals who always wanted to please, you know, make his doctors and nurses happy. He would brought gifts and such like. One day I said, you know, how are you getting on with your stoma? And, you know, you normally take his clothes off and I can look at the bag and look at the wound and see what the consistency of the feces is. And he, I'm sorry, I'm just the mental image. He had got a goldfish in a plastic bag and he'd put the goldfish in the plastic bag inside his stoma bag. And he was very proudly showing me his goldfish swimming around.
Oh, my God.
He'd done the whole thing as a laugh. He thought the whole thing was very funny. But, you know,
as indeed it was.
It was very funny. Nothing to do with illness or anything like that. I mean, I thought it was very considerate.
You just rang the RSPCA.
Oh, God, new thoughts about goldfish in bowls. Yeah, no, won't go there.
No.
So there are other kinds of openings that sometimes get created. And the one that comes to mind was an elderly lady who had a replacement hip. She fractured her hip. And I got called to the ward. I was quite a junior doctor. Middle of the night, this woman had removed her stitches.
Right.
With her fingers. She was clearly, you know...
a nurse.
Because of the medication. Because of the medication, she was a bit confused and such like. She'd basically torn her wound open and she had her hand inside the surgical wound, like the night after surgery. So
I've seen that film.
Yes. I think that sort of wraps up what we've got to talk about orifices, don't you?
I think it does. As we said before, you know, what goes up really should go down. And I wish to say, please don't have nightmares.
So hopefully we've stimulated your appetite for more medical morsels. Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Like us on social media. Tell your friends. It does help. And you can reach out to us to ask us questions, make suggestions, as long as they're polite. And if you've got any clues about how to look after goldfish, we're always like to hear them. You can reach us on all the social media at Join the Docs. And please also join us at the website, jointhedocs.com. There's all sorts of additional information. We'll be adding stuff continuously. There's going to be great merchandise featuring the work of our resident artist, Robin Gott. Until next time, please stay happy, stay healthy, because it beats the alternatives. Remember, you're going to spend a long time dead. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
We are grateful for you listening to Join the Docs. This is the legal stuff now that we have to say. The views and opinions expressed on Join the Docs are those of Dr. Nigel Guest, myself, Jonathan Sakia, and other people on our show, but please be aware that Join the Docs is not intended to be medical advice. It's for information and entertainment only. Please always take any health concerns to your doctor or other healthcare provider. We respect the privacy of patients and never identify individuals unless they've consented. We may change details, dates, place names, and so on to protect privacy. Listening to Join the Docs, interacting on our social media, emailing, or writing does not establish a doctor-patient relationship. Phew, well, I'm glad that's out the way. Please, everyone, be safe and well.